morning. My name's Randy Beck. I'm one of those rare birds. I was a native Houstonian, or I am a native Houstonian. I grew up in Southwest Houston, and I was born in 1957. My brother Steve was born about 6.5 years later, and my parents were divorced when I was 8 years old. That started kind of a whirlwind of things to happen. My mother remarried about 1.5 years later, and we moved to Pasadena, Texas, away from all my friends, familiar surroundings, everything that I knew. Within the next 5 months, my mother separated from husband number two, and 3 months later, my baby brother Bill was born. Now, over the next 4 years, my mom was married to husband number three, who was an alcoholic, and that created quite a bit of fury in my life, and then married number four. And as a result, I felt a lack of stability in my life. I'd really call it an out-of-control life. But fortunately, I had a dad that spent time with me and my brother Steve a couple times a week, which provided some level of stability and continuity into my life. But as I grew up, I had a huge need for predictability and being in control. By the time I was 15, I already knew that I was going to be an attorney. I had a huge need to be somebody. I wanted to be significant. And in my early 20s, I believed that personal and professional achievement would give me that significance and peace that I so desperately desired. But there seemed to be a hole in my life. In my early 20s, I tried to fill that hole with accomplishments, with work and school. Unfortunately, it is tough to be perfect all the time, and that's seemingly what it took to fill that hole. In addition, I tried to fill the hole with relationship after relationship with women. I was a good dancer, and it gave me the confidence to pick up women at nightclubs, which I typically went about 3 times a week. In fact, my coworkers called me Disco Randy. I'm going to go forward about 10 years for a second. Here I am, a young lawyer with my client with me, dressed to the hilt in my suit. I'm going into a downtown law firm, plush, and around the corner I hear this, "Is that you, Disco Randy?" Some things stick with you forever. But strangely enough, I had convinced myself that I was in control, that I was the author of my success. In fact, my philosophy about life was whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, he can achieve. And life looked pretty good back in my early 20s. Unfortunately, my measuring stick for success was basically that success I had at work and my relationship with women. And I thought that achievement with work and women would give me that significance and that peace in my life. But unfortunately, the circumstances changed. Within 1 year, my dreams were completely shattered. I had a sweetheart who desired to be my wife, and I got her pregnant. And I told her she needed to get an abortion. Shortly thereafter, she never wanted to speak with me again or see me again. A few months later, that law firm that I had spent 6 years working for prior to getting out of law school told me they didn't want to hire me as a new associate. I was devastated. The two areas that I looked for significance in my life, work and women, were both in the toilet. But God knew what I needed despite the circumstances. A man that I had known for several years invited me to a luncheon and then to a large Christian men's event. At that event, there were probably 4,000 men there, but the speaker seemed to be speaking directly to me. He talked about filling the hole in my life. He said that the only way to fill that hole is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. It might as well have been speaking Greek. Although I'd had some spiritual training as a young kid, I had taken a 13-year sabbatical from all religious activity. I hadn't graced the doors of a church or been at any spiritual event for over 13 years. The speaker said that there's a verse in the Bible that states, "All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." That didn't take much for me to accept. I knew that my life was a mess that I had caused and created. I was a sinner. I was a liar. I was a womanizer. I was lying to my boss about not going to work. I'd lied to him about being sick so I could go to a bowling tournament. And I continued to pursue women for my own pleasure and significance. There were times when I would pick up women from nightclubs and bring them home. So I knew I was a sinner. Then the speaker told me something that really shook me. He said, "It only took one sin to separate me from God forever. And that it didn't matter which sin, doesn't matter how bad they were, that I could never be good enough to earn my way back to God, to have that relationship, or to get into heaven." However, he did share one piece of good news, and he said that the Bible also says that while we're still sinners, Christ died for us. And he shared what that meant by explaining that Jesus Christ paid the price for my sins by dying on the cross and coming back to life 3 days later, making it possible for me to be forgiven for all my sins and for using women for my own pleasure and to stroke my ego and for lying. He also explained that Jesus had bridged the gap between man and God. There was this huge gap. I couldn't fill it myself, but Jesus Christ did it for me. Finally, the speaker shared with us that he explained that the Bible said I must accept that I was a sinner, that my way of living and choosing to do my own way had separated me from God, that no matter what I did or didn't do, I wasn't going to be able to earn my relationship with God, nor could I earn his forgiveness, and that Jesus Christ died for my sins and was raised from the dead, that Jesus' death and resurrection had made complete payment for my sins. In addition, he said that God's forgiveness is a free gift. I couldn't earn it, I couldn't pay for it, and I certainly didn't deserve it. All I had to do was accept it. That was tough for me because I had lived my entire life with the basic belief that when I died, I would stand before God, and as long as my good deeds outweighed my bad, I was going to get into heaven. But I realized that wasn't true. That's a lie. And on that day in April of 1983, I chose to accept that I had caused the separation from God, and that I was ready as an act of my will to trust in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. The Bible says that to all who receive Jesus Christ, to those who believe in his name, God gives the right to become children of God. At that precise moment, I became a child of God. I became a new creation. Now, during the next 2 years or so, life was pretty busy. I began growing slowly as a Christian. I met Carol, my wife, along with her boys that were then ages 3 and 5. We bought a home. I started my career as an estate planning attorney. But about 3 years later, I met a guy. It was 1986. I met a man who took an interest in me and my life, Jay Baker. Now, Jay listened to me. He spent lots of time with me. He even met me when and where it was inconvenient to him. I was pretty self-centered, and so he came to me, usually met with me within 2 blocks of my office so we could meet. He was very patient with me. He invited me to take a look at the Bible to see what God said about life and God's perspective on many of the different issues in life. First, we met in a one-on-one discipleship using a series of short books called Operation Timothy, which many of y'all have either heard about or have experienced. And over the years, he's encouraged me to memorize Scripture, to study the Bible, and to learn how to pray. Early in my relationship with Jay, he took time to help me develop relationship with other godly men who, well, one of those men was his Paul, the guy that discipled him by the name of Dave. And he spent time, this being Jay, spent time with me relationally and in the Bible, which had enormous impact on me and my family, which you'll soon discover and understand why. The impact of having Jesus in my life has brought about several significant changes. I'm going to probably share about three of them with you. First, Jesus gave me the courage and the strength to stand up for my marriage, despite the example that I had as a kid. Remember, as you may recall, my mother was married and divorced four times. Didn't have a real good example there. And approximately 24 years ago, I actually moved out of my house and separated from Carol. Carol and I have fought over the years, most of our married life, over the kids, how to raise them. And I told my wife that I wouldn't move back into the house until our oldest son, who was age 20, moved out. And Brian had chosen not to work or to go to school for a year and a half, and he would simply party with his friends with the money that my wife would give him or that he would earn selling drugs. Carol made it very clear to me that there's no way I was going to kick her son out of the house. And as you can imagine, tensions were high. Relationship between Carol and I were lousy, and I was emotionally just worn out. But fortunately, having Jay in my life and several other godly men helped me keep my sanity in a proper perspective. But it was tough. Carol was accusing me of abandoning her on a daily basis. But I desired to be with my wife, but I could no longer tolerate two roosters under the same house, Brian and me. And my son made it perfectly clear to me that there was nothing, and he made it clear both verbally and in action, that there was nothing that I could do to force him out of the house, and he didn't see anything he needed to change. But approximately 2 years, two months after our separation, Carol asked me, said, "Would you be willing to talk to Dave?" That's the man who discipled Jay, about our point of impasse and maybe come up with a solution. And fortunately, my wife had a very high opinion of Dave because we had a relationship with him and his wife, Donna. For many years, we had spent time with them. They had invited us to dinner. We had come to Moe Ranch numerous times with them. We spent other events with them. And through that meeting with Dave, we both shared our hurts, our concerns. We listened to Dave's counsel, and we came up with a solution. Now, my wife was afraid that Brian would end up out on the street. And frankly, I didn't care where Brian went as long as he was out of my house. But when Dave realized that it really would only take about $2,000 to get Brian into an apartment with a good chance of success, Dave said, "I'll volunteer to contribute to the Brian moving out fund." And that really moved my heart. I mean, I softened. And within 2 weeks, the deal was done. Carol and I were back in the house together. Brian was in his own apartment. And we had some success there. Now, another significant change that's resulted from having Jesus in my life was a shift from a life that was entirely focused on me and my pleasures to a life that had more of an internal perspective. As I began to grow and falter as a follower of Christ, the need to develop a purpose became more and more important. Without a purpose, I was finding a hard time determining which activities were beneficial and which ones were either less beneficial or really detrimental. My general purpose is to know God and to make Him known. And discipling another man got me out of myself, and watching God create that spiritual reproduction helped me understand the value of focusing on my purpose, one that would have an eternal value. Now, here's an example of spiritual reproduction in my life that only God could have accomplished. At a gathering about 10 years ago, we had five generations. We had Jay Baker, who discipled me, who discipled Russell Brandon. Many of you know Russell and his family are here. Who discipled TJ, and TJ discipled Jeremy and his family, who are here today. It's amazing, but it almost didn't happen. The reason I say that is that Russell moved to Beaumont shortly after we started meeting, and I figured that Russell was on his own. I'd see if God would give me another man to disciple. And Jay asked me, he says, "Does Russell still want to meet?" And I said, "I don't know, but what difference does that make? He lives 100 miles away." Well, Jay said, "So what? Remember me? I'm the self-centered guy that made Jay come and meet with me two blocks away from where I was working when we began." Well, Russell and I continued to meet and communicate with each other. I would occasionally drive to Beaumont. He would oftentimes drive to Houston. Or many times we would meet in the middle in Baytown. Any of y'all heard of a place called Cracker Barrel? We became regulars at Cracker Barrel. And we met for years like that, for every 2 weeks. We actually became very intimately involved in each other's lives through Russell's dating life, through him getting married to Renee after she recovered from a very serious automobile accident that almost took her life, the restoration of some of the damage that they incurred at Hurricane Rita in Beaumont, and their time in Papua New Guinea and in Alaska, and now back in Houston. In fact, I need to tell you a story about Alaska. He invited our family up there to enjoy the time up there and to go salmon fishing. And on the last day of our trip, he says, "We got to get a few more fish." So we went out into the bay and we're going fishing. And as occasionally, if y'all know Russell, he's occasionally has trouble being on time. And so at the last minute, I said, "Russell, we got to go. We're supposed to meet our wives back at such and such time, and I don't know how we're going to make it." He said, "Great." He said, "You drive as fast as you can drive, and I'm going to be in the back of the boat. We've got a fillet board on the back, and I'm going to be filleting fish as you're driving back at 25 miles an hour, just bouncing back and forth." How that guy managed with a knife like that, I have no idea. But he managed to fillet all the fish by the time we got back to shore. Incredible. But investing time in Russell and other Jesus-Paul-Timothy relationships has changed my life. It has eternal value. There's one other significant change I'd like to share with you. God has changed my attitude toward my wife. He has given me a heart to please her and to protect her. We're still dealing with lots of issues, but God has helped us to communicate through them instead of stuffing our emotions. For example, Carol's dad and his young Vietnamese wife, Hannah, have lived with us for several years. Hannah happens to be 4 years younger than my wife. Did you catch that? 4 years younger than my wife. So there's about a 25-plus year difference between her dad and his wife. There's been, as a result, a lot of tension between Carol and Hannah. Been quite a bit of tension between Carol and her dad. But God knows how to handle these things. I mean, fortunately, some of that tension has subsided in that Hannah recently moved to Virginia to live with her son-in-law and with her daughter, who are expecting their first child in a few months. So God has a sense of humor. Through my entire marriage, especially the last 6 years, God has used my wife to break my pride, my self-sufficiency, and my stubbornness. My natural tendency is to avoid conflict and to seek comfort for myself. But the Bible says, "But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." I don't have to be self-sufficient. God has promised to take care of my needs. God is more than able to take care of my marriage and to take care of Carol. My job is to focus on my relationship with Jesus Christ. And by doing that, God's going to continue to change me and my life, which started with that decision that I had to trust Jesus Christ back in as my Lord and my Savior in April of 1983. Thank y'all. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm inserting myself for one.
Yep, okay. And we forgot about Dave. Okay, yeah. That's what I was coming to.
Hey, Dave, you want to make your way down? You probably thought I forgot about you, didn't you?
No, you did.
You're right, I did. I was trying to cover for myself, bro.
I was about to cover
throw me
for
under
you.
The bus. As Dave's making his way down, I know James mentioned that JBT is a men's movement, and yes, it does focus on the men. I think our heart's desire is to get to men, to get to the families, but we're really interested in families. And you might wonder, well, a wife might wonder, well, where do I fit in all of this? Well, the ladies have the same opportunity that the men have. We have ladies that are discipling other women. So, yes, a men's ministry, yes, but the women are right, can have the same opportunity. And then as you heard Randy talk about Dave and Don, it's also a couples ministry as well. So it kind of covers the spectrum, but we're deeply interested in families. So just wanted to expand on that a little bit. Go ahead.
Gary. Well, I just want to tell you a story. For years now, Donna and I have changed houses, and this one we've been quite a long time. We change houses, and our neighbors also change houses, and so a lot of change takes place just in where we live and dwell. So Donna and I decided a few years back that we would pray for the people that were going to come into our neighborhood, as soon as the house would sell, we'd begin praying for the people that were going to come. Well, our latest one that we had was answered in spades. I mean, we got Michael and Brittany. I just want to tell you just a little bit about them, and so you can get a picture. But Michael is, they since now have had two children. They now have a two-year-old and an almost one-year-old, and Michael. And so our houses are lined up almost next to each other. And Michael is a gregarious guy. In other words, he's a party man. And whenever there's a party or a reason to have a party, Michael has one. And so we are part of Michael's, because of our friendship, we are part of all that. So, in fact, Michael, he's one of the few guys that I've seen have a party on Groundhog Day. But he had one. And so his one-year-old son, his two-year-old son, everybody gathering around the, you know, the high chair, and kid doesn't know what's going on. Michael's partying down with him, you know. But anyway, when I'm after he had his first son, I was walking up the driveway, and I said, "So, Michael, when are you going to pass out the cigars?" He said, "Whenever you're ready." He said, "I said, well, you know," he said, "Why don't you bring the cigars, and I'll bring the bourbon." So I said, "Great." So in our backyard, right after his son was born, we hadn't been familiar. We spent our first hour together, and it went well. and it was good to hear him and what he was doing and his life, and he'd come from California, what was going on in California, how he was raised. We got to know each other in about an hour. Well, over time, of course, they attend all the parties, then his parties attend us, because the people in the parties come into our house, and now we've met many of Michael's friends, so it's a kind of a commune from Michael's gathering of people. So, but he's really a great guy. So anyway, last year, coming before we came to Mo Ranch, we were packing the car up, and Michael comes over and he says, "So where are you going?" I said, "We're going out to this place called Mo Ranch out in Kerrville. We go out there with our family." And he said, "Oh, really? What do you do out there?" I said, gave him a little glimpse of what we do. "Oh, that's great." So anyway, we get in the car and we leave, and Mark, probably a year later, same thing took place last week on Friday. And we've been connecting and doing different things. He played in my golf tournament, and we visit and him whore. And so he's right out there again, you know, when we're packing up the car. "Where are you going?" I said, "We're going to Mo Ranch. Remember what we were talking about that?" He goes, "Yeah, I remember that." I said, so how many people go there?" I said, "Oh, someplace between 200 and 250. I'm in. I said, "Well, we can't go this year, Michael, because we're on the way out there right now, you know. So, I mean, but he's the type to pick it up and get his wife, and they're gone, you know." So I said, "But let's look at next year." And I said, "You know, it would be great if you guys could come next year." "Where do I sign up?" I said, "Well, this is where I'm talking about with you guys today. I've got, instead of taking my own registration blank home, I'm taking two, one for me, one for Michael." So we're thinking about, you know, Mo Ranch and people, and thinking about who else. You know, we were thinking about Michael coming to Mo Ranch before he got in the house. But how much planning do we do to think about who might we invite, or who am I around, or who are my friends, who have I not invited? Usually it takes 2 or 3 years to get somebody here. So you have to start out early and start thinking about that, and then watch God work. Now, I just want to share one verse with you before I close it out. This is just a very short thing. But I don't know if you realize this. Another thing that happened with Michael and I, am I okay, Gary, time-wise? Okay. We had trees that separate us, and Michael's property is on the trees. The trees are on there. So he's out there, and he told me he had to trim the trees up, and he had everything lined up as far as the price. And he started asking me how many branches I wanted and whatever, you know. So I said to Donna, "You know, it'd probably be a good idea if we help Michael with the price of this, you know." And she goes, "Yeah, we'll do that." So we take a little pile of money in our hand, you know, and I went out to see Michael, and I said, "Michael, just take this for, you know, to help you with it, with your
tree trimming.
Thank you, Don. I know I needed her for something." Yeah.
Besides umbrella.
So anyway, I think I have an opinion that I think you can buy people's souls. I know that kind of sounds stupid, but it's really the truth. In other words, people that when you give to people who don't have things, they're really endeared to you. And so I think that was the turning point in our whole relationship, was that situation. But here's what Jesus says about it. It's kind of interesting. This is one of the most, Luke 16 is one of the most unread and unspoken of passages in the Bible, because nobody gets it. And what happens is that in this, in verse 9, he's talking about this guy. Do you remember the guy that went out and he said he bought this, he had this stuff, and he's going to get fired? And so he said, well, just mark down what you owe me. Just mark down 20% off. And another guy, mark 30% off. So what he was doing was making friends. And he was doing it in an illegal way. And Jesus comes up and commends them. Now, how is somebody going to preach on that? Because Jesus is really, I mean, if you take it black and white, it's a mess. And so, but Jesus says, this guy, here's what he says about him. He says, "For I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous money." That's one of the ways that you make friends. "And when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home." In other words, you're preparing yourself by giving money to friends or to people, or to lost people around you, just giving them money. So, and then 12 says, Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon or money, who will commit to you your trust, the true riches? So the true riches come from these people who are coming to Christ. That's really where the riches come from. So when I look at Michael, when they got, and this whole thing, I'm looking at Michael leading Mo Ranch. You know, that's the beginning. I'm seeing the world through Michael's eyes, and he's lost. He doesn't know what's up. And this is what Jesus is saying. So if you have been faithful in what is another man's, then you will be faithful in much. So it's getting ourselves involved in other people, and not just our own family or our own relationships, but people who are in our lives who can be here with us. So in other words, you can think about that. And you want to add to that now?
Yeah.
Okay. Here comes Donnie.
No, I was thinking, he asked me to come up here, and I don't like to do that, but I thought of something that just came to my mind, and that is making a Mo Ranch jar. And that's for people who don't have a lot of money, for people who do have a lot of money. And you can tell your children, you can agree among you, that instead of going to get a latte this week, we're going to put it in here. And you say it to, in front of your family. This is for Mo Ranch for next year. And if you've got a lot of money, then you take that jar and you give it to somebody who doesn't. Maybe somebody who you've invited that doesn't have the ability to pay for it. And if you do, if you are one who doesn't have a lot of money, then your family has contributed, and they know if they get fewer Christmas presents, you tell them this is for Mo Ranch, and I think they would go along with that, and at the end of the year get them excited about what they've contributed to get there, because they want to go. So, that's it.
She's amazing, isn't she?
I am.
I mean, I learned all my stuff from her.